Good morning, good afternoon, well, good night, or whenever you're listening to this, and welcome to the Voices of Legacy with your friend, Pastor Carl. Today on the Voices of Legacy, we're honored to welcome Mr. Jeff Simpson. You may have heard some of his commercials on radio or otherwise for Simpson Law Firm. Yes, it's that guy. Dedicated attorney serving Toledo. Mr. Simpson has been practicing law in northwestern Ohio since 2006, if I'm correct, representing clients in both criminal and family law cases across the region. That means he knows a lot of people. In addition to it, the Simpson Law Firm office, he serves as an assistant public defender with the Toledo Legal Aid Society. It's good work, assigned to Judge Stacy Cook and Lindsay Navarre. Since 2019, Mr. Simpson's earned his Bachelor's of Art in Social Sciences from Harding University of Arkansas, where he also played college football. And I'm here to tell you, it still shows in a good way. He obtained his Juris Doctorates from the University of Toledo, so he's a rocket too, actively participating in the Mott. Is it Mott or Moot?
It's mock trial. Yeah.
Mott. Court trial team during his studies. Beyond his legal practices, Mr. Simpson is involved in various professional organizations, has conducted continued legal education sessions for the local bar association, and is a member of, the procedural fairness training team. So you're really involved through the Toledo Municipal Courts. He is also a graduate of the LEAD program for the city of Toledo, which trains individuals to be leaders in their respective fields, residing in Toledo with his son, Pierce, and Mr. Simpson is also a father of Kennedy Fowler and a grandfather. And I question him on that because he doesn't look old enough to have any grandchildren. But nevertheless, of young Lincoln Fowler, who also resides in Toledo. Good morning, Mr. Simpson.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Very well. I cannot complain. I was tickled because I thought I was the only person that says very well. and you gave me exactly what I usually say to people this morning. Tell us some more about yourself, maybe some things that people don't know.
People don't know. Oh, geez.
Yeah, I'm making you think early.
It is. Well, it is that. I'm blessed to be in Toledo. I like it here. Mm. I came here for law school from Arkansas, originally from the Detroit area.
Ah.
And I found the Midwest, especially this part of it, was to my liking.
So you're from the Motor City originally?
I am, yeah. Dearborn, Michigan.
Oh, okay. Okay. Know the area quite well. Awesome. So what made you move to Toledo?
Law school. Okay. Law school. I'd spent enough time in the South. At that time, I was married. We had Kennedy. It was just time to come to the Midwest. And mm-hmm. this was close enough to Detroit to be close to family, but enough to establish on my own.
Gotcha. So family and, mm-hmm. and business and your aspirations in law.
That's right.
What led you to the legal practice?
I was on spring break mm-hmm. in college, and we had gone to Washington, D.C.
Ah.
And we had spent the time in and out of federal buildings, in and out of the Smithsonian, we had some fun. We were still young, but we had spent some time in the U.S. Senate.
Ah.
And we were in the gallery watching a debate of who knows what it was. And I was so inspired by the work they were doing and just their passion for it that I began to get a little bit more involved in politics in college mm-hmm. And started thinking about what I would do to get into politics. Mm-hmm. And law school was the widest path to that.
Understood.
To that end. Now, in the meantime, I did run for public office at one point, mm-hmm. was unsuccessful. I still am involved in the local party, but I do enjoy being a lawyer. I very much enjoy it. Mm. It's very hard work, but the 10% of the time that I actually love it make up for that 90% of the time where it's a grind.
Mm. So there's some challenges, obviously.
It's a number of challenges. The work I do with felony criminal work and family law litigation, you see people at some of the worst times in their lives. Mm-hmm. You are the closest to them, therefore you get some of their anger, and you receive some of their frustration, and you receive a lot of their lashing out mm-hmm. because no one else will listen. So you kind of have to wear that a little bit. some of the facts of the cases you take home with you, some of the facts of people's lives you hit you in a way that really, really hurts. Mm. But to be there for them and to get a good result for those cases really makes up for that journey.
I heard someone say once that it doesn't hurt unless you care.
Okay.
So that probably means that you care.
I would think I would, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. That's wonderful. So you're called to potentially politics, but you fell into.
Yeah, I think this is my calling.
Yeah.
This is, I think, what I was meant to do.
Awesome. But do you think there's, and I'm not here to put you on the spot, but any more aspirations for a pursuit of
I don't think so.
Political office?
I don't think so.
No?
I like what I do. I like being a volunteer for the party. I like helping others win elections. I like my life right now, and I like the role I have kind of carved out for myself.
Gotcha. Well, you never know what the future may hold.
Sure, of course.
I'm speaking positively.
Thank you.
In Toledo, there's a balance I think that's needed, and we kind of need folks that have aspirations like yourself, and that's just my opinion, but nevertheless, balancing roles in both private practice and your role as assistant public defender, how do you navigate the challenges and the rewards in these positions?
That's kind of a tough one to answer. I have, you know, days of that are my public defender days, times that are my public defender days. Tuesday and Wednesday are my big ones. So I allot time during the week to prepare for those dockets, to meet with clients, to review discovery, to speak with the prosecutors, file my motions, post, you know, from when it's time to go to court. And the other times, when you have your own practice, you have responsibilities elsewhere, you just have to find it. You have to find it. It's not so much a balance. It's a lot of hours, and it's a lot of work.
Well, I can appreciate, not being an attorney but formerly in law enforcement, that there's a huge difference between a divorce and somebody that's trying to avoid going to prison.
There's a huge difference. And a lot of times in what I'm dealing with meeting people in the family law and divorce realm, is kind of unraveling their expectations. Mm. A lot of clients I have a television view of what a divorce is.
Yes.
Let's just have them sign. Like, well, we have to go to court. We have to, the judge, you know, I tell people this isn't necessarily true, but they're lonely and they want to see us. You know, they want us to walk in and say hello and do the statutory requirements require you to test on the record for the finding of it. But a lot of times in family law, things don't move quickly, which is to the benefit.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, you did not get married quickly.
That's
you put
true.
Time into this relationship. You put time into building equity in your home. You put time into your job and into your 401k and your retirement account. It takes time to kind of separate those things out. We don't do things quickly. Speed is not the friend of the litigator. Efficiency is.
Could be dangerous.
It can be dangerous. Yeah. You'll miss something. I mean, getting things done over with now never is a good option. Mm. You know, and I'll have clients, I want this over with today. Okay, then we'll give him all the money that you have and the kids and the house, and we'll walk away with nothing, but I can get that done. I can get that done today. Mm. You know, of course, that's not what you want.
Yeah.
You know, we want to be able to find that balance between a good outcome for your long-term goals, your medium goals, and then, you know, not wasting our time.
So building your public persona, because I think just about everybody in Toledo has heard some type of advertisement from Simpson Law Firm. Has that been a goal of yours as far as getting the word out that you exist? I mean, it seems like you've done a good job at that.
Oh, thank you very much. Social media has been a help for that, you know, both through Instagram and Facebook and the various other outlets. It's a goal to make your name known. I've tried different outlets before with television commercials or radio, but you don't want your phone to ring all the time.
Yeah.
You want to be found.
Mm-hmm.
I need people to find me when they need me. If I was selling Pepsi, it'd be a different thing.
Understood.
You know, most of my clients need me once, maybe twice in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need me every day.
Well, I could see somebody getting divorced and then needing criminal defense. That kind of makes sense.
Sometimes there's an overlap.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. But often you want to be found.
Yes.
That's the goal of our industry, is to be found. And you want to create credibility. So a lot of my postings on social media give a little bit of the information away. And that's okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I think it's more meaningful to have a connection with somebody. We're all scrolling through our phones and our devices.
Oh, yes.
You know, 3-4 seconds. We're all doing it all day long. If I can connect with somebody who says, look, you know, I know what I'm talking about. This is how we do things. This is something to consider if these things are happening to do. Today's post, I think, was what happens if a parent keeps a child from a co-parent, which happens from a variety of reasons. There's many different ways we can address that. Come talk to me. You know, that kind of stuff.
So you're giving away, I guess, counsel to a certain degree.
No, I'm not giving away counsel. That that's specific. The bar doesn't want me to say that. It's not legal advice. But sharing knowledge, sharing experience, sharing how one would attack something and providing options.
Useful information.
Sure, useful information, yeah.
Gotcha.
That's right.
Gotcha. That seems like you're looking for quality even with your clients.
A lot of what I do in the beginning of contact with a client is trying to get to what they're expecting, okay? So if I can set a tone before we meet, then our meeting, our consultation, our initial consultation, be so much more efficient and so much easier to do. A lot of what we do in the consult is kind of unravel what they've heard from someone else. You know, a lot of times their uncle or their friend or their coworker has been divorced, and they'll give someone their experience, which will then set a bad
expectation.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we have to talk about that. Let's talk about those things in the macro. Let's talk about what the goal of the court is, or the goal of this action. What are we doing here? What do these terms mean? You know, what does split custody mean? What does shared custody mean? What do all this stuff, you know, mean? So you can understand how we go forward from here.
Yeah.
And I have no problem sharing that with everybody.
Yeah.
I think it makes a better community to know these things. If we have a shared language, we can get things done a lot faster.
Ed X, do you have any books or anything that you've written?
I do not. No. No, I have not. I don't have the time for that.
Kind of sounds like you got one in you.
Maybe I do, yeah.
It really does. Your involvement in the procedural fairness training team in the LEAD program, it kind of indicates a commitment to leadership and fairness in the legal system. Can you share more about these roles and these different organizations?
Sure. The LEAD program was put on a joint venture between the county and the city to identify people mostly in public service who will lead from the middle. And leadership is about connecting with others. It's about knowing your position. It's about having credibility, establishing credibility. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's not just that those orders. It's you know, we have that.
It's not about just being the boss.
Right. It's not, you know, we have the, I guess, the drill sergeant mentality of a leader. That's not necessarily, it can be.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter Kennedy is a member of the armed services, so she can, you know, those drill sergeants to her when she was in basic training, those were leaders. But they also had credibility. They knew how to read a map. They knew how to get the work done. They knew how to push and pull and push and pull. So in the private sector, a lot of it is connecting with people. It's a lot of meeting them where they are, knowing what they value, and seeing how they see a problem.
Yeah.
And then we attack the problem together.
That kind of leads back to your previous comment about people kind of looking at a circumstance, in this case being a leader, from a caricature based on a movie or a film or a television show. I found that even in my own life. This is truly about you, but I remember back in Holiday Inn training, and I was training to be assistant manager. I was super young, and I thought that I'm the boss now. You know, I'm not working for my dad anymore. I can tell people what to do. Everybody's working for me. I'm the head guy, and you're going to do what I say.
Right.
And it didn't work.
No,
it didn't work at all. As a matter of fact, I almost lost my job with that mentality. You have to be humble and listen and actually implement the rules of operations established by whatever the responsibility that you have.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people want to be led. We are attracted to strong leaders. We are attracted to good leaders. You know, it makes
with credibility.
Sure. And it makes, you know, people that have to respond to a manager, if they have a good boss, a good manager, they're happy at their job.
They'll do anything. You know, almost.
They're happier at their job. Yeah. There's no stress there. They don't have to work for, we've all worked for a boss, you know, in a variety of times that was bad at his job, that made your job harder.
Yes.
No matter what it would be. So a lot of times with leadership, it's about connecting with not just the people you're leading, but other leaders in different silos, different industries and organizations. And that's kind of stuff we worked on in that course. It was about a year-long course.
Oh, really? And is there a cost entailed in that?
That I can't speak to.
Oh, okay.
But it was.
Oh, okay. Just wondering. Having run for public office and actively participated in Lucas County Republican Party, what motivates you to engage in public policy in the public arena? How do you think your experience may influence that?
Well, I think that's a responsibility to my community. Mm-hmm. That's what I think I owe this community. Mm. Being sure that I'm part of a political process, mm-hmm. and making sure we get our message or whomever out there, you know, mm-hmm. as a choice for the voters. And I mm-hmm. I take that very seriously. Both my children and my grandson is named after presidents, so I take the political process very seriously. that's a kind of a
but I didn't know if you did it on purpose.
Very much on purpose. Yes, very much was on purpose.
That's awesome. That's amazing. I remember we had our current mayor, Wade, and he mm-hmm. said almost identically what you're saying right now. To serve the public is very important, and to take it seriously is very mm-hmm. important. Not to take it for granted that everything's just going to work out. No, you have to be involved.
You have to be involved.
And
that's
it
right.
sounds like that's what you're inspiring even through your engagement. Outside of your professional life, you had to know it was coming. What hobbies or interests do you pursue? Are you still playing football?
Oh, no. I'm not playing football. My son right now he just finished his senior year. Uh-huh. He played for Maumee High School. He was an all-state defensive lineman.
Oh, wow.
Currently trying to find where he's going to land for him to continue his football career.
Is he as big as you or bigger?
He's big. Mm-hmm. He's not as tall as I am. He plays defensive line, mm-hmm. much more athletic, mm-hmm. Probably a lot faster even than I was at his age. Clearly faster than I am now. But even at the same age, he would have been a problem for me to block. I was an offensive lineman.
I was going to ask.
So he would have been a problem for me to block.
Oh wow!
So he's pretty good at what
That's
he does.
That's got to make you happy.
Very much. Yeah. It's been lifelong. He started playing football when he was four.
Oh wow!
With flag football, and then worked his way up.
So he understands the game.
Yeah, it's been a connection, bonding moment for the two of us.
So awesome. That's very awesome. So family seems to be an important aspect of your life. How has being a father and a grandfather and a professional shape your perspective and priorities for your personal and professional life? Has it changed yet?
Has it changed? I will say that being a father, I can appreciate what other fathers go through mm. in not seeing their children and wanting to see their children and wanting better for their children. I can appreciate some of my clients in the criminal realm being separated from mm. them and how hard that is for them. Being a grandfather, I think I can see, not to be morbid, but a light at the end of the tunnel in the next generation, so to speak.
What you're leaving behind.
Sure. Yeah. And then you start thinking about, you know, what am I leaving behind? How is this community better for my children and grandchildren? That realization comes on you when there's, you know, more generations running around. So I think that being a father, being a grandfather, I do connect closer with my clients, you know, even with both genders, because women want to see their children just as much as men do, and they want their children to succeed. So it's a connecting point with my clients.
Awesome. So I guess maybe this may lead to another question. I'm sorry for backing away from the mic, but I'm just thinking. Without disclosing anything, of course, you're an attorney. You're probably pretty good at this. What has been some of the hardest cases that you've had to deal with since you've been practicing? And how did they affect you?
There's two ways you can answer that. It's the facts of the case are so shocking. Or the procedures and the end result are poor. Mm. So when you do any kind of case in which another person is hurt, those are tough. Mm. You know, but you have to represent your person. You have to represent your client. You have to represent the person who you have a duty to, or don't take the case. I mean, so...
have you had to decline any criminal cases?
I have in the past, but most of them I take on, and I understand my role here. I do my very best not to judge someone else's actions, but the facts are the facts, and we have to deal with them. And we deal with the procedures and the constitutionality of law enforcement's investigation and the offenses that may pop up. But those are the ones that, in your quiet moments, kind of leave you with a little bit of a chill. It has not affected my work. I do very well. I very much try and do my best for everyone. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that kind of leave you, as it would affect anybody. They affect people.
Yeah.
The other ones are the ones when the processes of the judicial system are used against a person and you're not happy with it. Because I'm a part of it.
Yes.
You know, oftentimes, I mean, almost every time in a criminal defense realm, I'm the last one to the party. You know, law enforcement's there. Mm-hmm. The prosecutor gets the report. They file against the grand jury. The judge gets the case. And then I get either appointed or retained. Mm-hmm. And I'm the last guy there, you know. But so I'm kind of responding to what everybody else says.
And you have the greatest responsibility, at least for the defendant.
Possibly. Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, I do. And it's a very serious responsibility. But there are cases when you just don't feel good about what's happening. And those are the ones that really rile me up in a real way, that this is not what we're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. We all should be knowing better than this. It happens, not very often, but it does happen.
Well, it's a machine, and the machine's supposed to work, but it doesn't all. We all know that.
You know, look, everyone does their best.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's not as if law enforcement officers are running around trying to charge the innocent. Mm-hmm. This is what their opinion is.
But that is a misnomer.
This is what happens. This is what they see. This is their report. Okay, fair. Mm-hmm. The prosecutor is not twisting their mustache trying to charge everybody under the sun.
Yeah.
But this is their opinion. Mm-hmm. And as you have any system, there's going to be those times when you look at it and say, this is a mistake. Mm-hmm. And we have to fix this somehow, or at least make it right for this individual. Those are the ones that really get you going. And then, you know, those cases are the ones that bother you the most.
I understand. And I can tell you probably have some cases on your mind that you can't necessarily disclose.
Yeah, thank you.
And I think one of the things that people do exaggerate in their imagination a lot of times is prosecutors are actually paid extra for sending somebody to jail.
They are not, no. No, there's none of that stuff.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they... I'm very blessed by the prosecutors I've worked with and the judges I'm in front of, both publicly and privately, mm-hmm. for being able to be open to communication.
That's good.
To being able to listen and want a fair result. They get stuck in their ways, so to speak. They get...
jaded, maybe?
No, I don't want to say that. I want to say that they, just because we disagree doesn't mean one of us is wrong. Mm-hmm. So if I have a position, this is what I think, they'll listen and they say, well, so to speak, I don't necessarily agree and this is where I'm at. So we can have that conversation.
And you're dealing with different cases with the same judges.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it would be beneficial for you not to take anything personally anyway.
You very much try not to, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you very much try not to. Yeah. And we are blessed in this community with the bench and the criminal defense and prosecutor bar that we have.
Yeah, I would agree. I've met a good number of them, not all, mm-hmm. Since I've been back home. I'm originally from Toledo, and I would definitely agree with that. Well, what advice would you offer to an aspiring attorney who wishes to make a meaningful impact on the community that he may be or she may be serving in?
Well, two things you've got to get. You got to get the attorney part down. Mm-hmm. When I was a young attorney, I would sit in the courtroom and listen. Mm. There was a time when you could take, and you still can, you can be a private attorney and take public appointments on criminal cases. Okay. And I would sit for those dockets and I'd listen to what all the other attorneys would say. I'd copy some of them. Some of them I wouldn't, but I would listen to the way they would craft their arguments, and I would kind of listen as to how you do this. Mm-hmm. You know, in law school is great, but law school is intellectual, and law school was reading books and cases and case law and that kind of stuff and learning how to think like a lawyer. But nobody, even with my extensive training as it was with the trial team, no one really told you how to say it.
Mm-hmm. The application of
right.
Yeah.
The thinking was, well, the firm you get hired by will teach you how to be a lawyer, and that's great if you get hired by a firm. But yeah. When I graduated in 2006, the market was flush with lawyers, so you had to I had to go out on my own. You know, and that's how I, you know, did my own thing for a while. So my advice to younger lawyers is to watch and learn.
So no are different there internships or anything.
There are some
for young lawyers or aspiring.
The Public Defender's Office, Toledo Legal Aid Society, has a great fellowship program for new lawyers. Wonderful program where you are in municipal court and you're in felony court, doing the work with a senior lawyer, supervisor lawyer, so you can learn these things. Mm. But it's just like watching game film, man. You got to watch.
Yeah.
You got to watch. You know, you get better at, you know, actors get better at acting by watching actors. Football players, basketball players get better at their sport by watching what people do. Mm-hmm. So you got to watch it. You got to watch what people do. Figure out what works for you, what you don't like, why, you know, that didn't work, what the approach other people have. So you can learn how to do this. And the second is just to get involved. You got to show up. You got to darken someone's door right. And start, you know, doing the hours and so to speak. It doesn't come easy. It's a long, long process, but it is worth it.
Yeah.
It is worth it.
And don't just get it for the money and prestige.
No. And that's not how you do this. Any business will tell you, don't do this for the money because it will not be enough. This is about answering a calling. This is about doing good for others and actually finding meaning in your work.
Awesome. I love that. You've got a book, I'm telling you. But anyway, looking ahead, what are your goals for your legal practice involvement in Toledo, Ohio?
2024 was a busy year. As I looked at 2025 and beyond, I need to kind of firm up some things intra-office-wise, be a little bit more efficient in how I handle cases. But beyond that, just keep moving forward. I don't have a lot of specific goals other than just I can be better at this aspect. I can be better at this aspect. I can do better at this little thing. And trying to tie all these small things together so that the end product and the macro things take care of themselves.
So introspective improvement,
I guess.
And it's good to be honest about what you're not good at.
Yeah, yeah. We all have to, take time to reflect. What did I do? Yeah. You know, even if it's 5 minutes. And the walk back from the courthouse every day is important to me, or the walk back from the Lucas County Jail. Mm-hmm. I can reflect on my day before I go to the gym or I go home or I go to church, and I can reflect on what I did and what didn't happen, what didn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, those 5 minutes or 3 minutes just when you're walking by yourself at the end of the day are really good to be able to focus as to what I need to do tomorrow. Yeah.
Some folks call it clearing your head.
Sure.
Getting it all out. So the final question of the day, Lord, you can tell I've been downtown a good bit. Nevertheless, what do you think your current legacy is, and what would you like for it to be? It's almost the same question, to be honest.
I don't know what my current legacy is. I would like my legacy to be someone who respected others and worked hard in whatever way that is. I take my work very seriously. Mm-hmm. I take wanting people to know that I'm listening to them. And you know, the procedural fairness training team that we do, that's part of it, is listening to defendants and listening to people, make sure they have a voice in the process. Having a voice in this, in their own future, is meaningful, and it lowers recidivism, and it lowers other aspects of crime and court participation. One of the things about me, he referenced this at the beginning, I am a big guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 6'4", and I have dark features, and my hair is long. My beard is dark. It's not as dark as I'd like it to be. But
well, that's wisdom.
Sure. Huh. What I don't want people to do is to feel like I'm bullying them into anything.
Understood.
You know, I know how I appear. Mm-hmm. So I want my legacy to be someone who listened and respected others and worked hard.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I think you may be accomplishing a good bit of that by your reputation, but that's just me speaking.
Thank you very much.
We thank you for joining us for the Voices of Legacy today. Be kind to someone, and we'll see you soon. Thank you for listening to the Voices of Legacy. This is your friend, Pastor Carl Mitchell III, your host of this program. We want you to go to wgte.org/legacy to like, share, subscribe, and hear all of our past podcasts and our future podcasts. Be a friend and join with us in the Voices of Legacy, where you're writing your own legacy every day that you live. Have a blessed day.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.